Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Action Network Podcast.
Better than most.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Four!
You got real talent. Don't concentrate on golf.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another golf edition of the Action Network Podcast presented by BetMGM. I'm Amanda Rose, and for Jason Sobel, we graciously gave him the week off, but you'll see him this Wednesday night for the Gimme. I am joined by Justin Ray of the 21st Group. This is your second week back from maternity leave. Okay, how's the whole, you know, raising a human thing working out for you?
I'm going to tell you, Amanda, it's really overrated. Now, I'm just being honest with you. Overrated. No, I'm kidding. Kid's awesome. Mom's great. Everyone's happy. Everyone's a little sleep deprived, but no, all is well. It's good to be on here with you. We gave Sobel, you know, he gets about like 48 hours off every year or two. So, yeah. You know, it's him enjoying his much richly earned couple days of respite.
Exactly. He needs a break from all the golf he plays, I think, too.
So, yeah. Well, that's really the break. Yeah. The break from the, you know, Central Florida Pro-Am / scramble circuit that he's on most of the time. So
exactly. But before we get into this week's inaugural Palmetto Championship at Congaree, we do need to talk about this weekend, Saturday in particular. So Rahm has a 6-shot lead walking off the 18th green, and then he's informed he has COVID and needs a withdrawal. But he also did make history, I should add, as the first professional golfer to make a hole-in-one with COVID. So there is a bright side, but
that we know of. Like
$2 million
that we know of
officially.
There could be some dude on a tour somewhere who made an ace and then they didn't test. But yeah. I mean, what an incredible sequence of events to come out after the delay, make a hole in one. He recorded that was his best career round on the PGA Tour by strokes gained, which is no small feat for John Rahm, a guy who goes low all the time. He ties Tiger's 54 hole lead record at the Memorial. Oh, he looks like he's going to moonwalk like an 11 shot win. And then honestly, like based on the way he had his reaction, he said, not again. I was worried something worse. I was worried that like he was told about a family member or something horrible. I mean, yeah, this was big news and it was really sad. But I mean, in the immediate aftermath, you're almost kind of like, oh, okay. All right. That makes sense that he would have that kind of reaction and everything. Cause immediately I thought something much more severe. I wonder what your reaction was watching it. Just a really surreal kind of 20 minutes.
So I did not see it live. I had gone kayaking earlier in the day. It was like 90 degrees. It was absolutely blistering. We were out there for 5 hours and I had fallen asleep around like 6:30. Like I fell asleep very early for the night and I go to bed early anyway. So I didn't see it. I woke up the next morning and was like, oh my God. Like there was so much to take in. I had so much to absorb in such a short amount of time. Like I felt like Europe, when Europe wakes up to this news and they're like, oh my God, what happened on the PGA Tour? I was Europe, you know? So
nice. Yeah,
it was shocking though. I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts on the way they handled it? That was one of the shocking things to me.
So initially I thought, how could they do this to the guy right off the 72nd green? But this is a no-win situation for the tour. Like, what are they supposed to do? Have him walk off the green, high five fans, like, you know, hug somebody, like get in the cart with his caddy close by. Like that almost is visually worse. I don't really know what the answer is. I know that they did a pretty good job laying out the timeline of events of how everything happened, how he had the initial test. And then they wanted to make sure that it wasn't a false positive. So they didn't know. I think it was, he was walking up the 18th fairway when they got confirmation that he was in fact positive with COVID-19. So I don't think they can win. You know, I don't think that there's a great way to do it. I think that all things considered, I know that the tour gets ripped for everything they do. You know, it doesn't matter.
And a lot of the time it's like deserved, but.
Yeah, no. And there are things that are justifiable in that sense, but a lot of times too, I mean, they're in a situation where, you know, they can do no right. And I think that was kind of what it was from this situation. There's no great way to handle it. So I am a little bit thankful, and they might be too. Think about if this is a few years ago, William McGirt won his first and only PGA Tour event. What if it's a journeyman player up by five shots, having the week of his life? This could be life-changing. And then that happens. Like that would have been, for a guy like John Rahm, like, lose $1.6 million, lose a big prestigious tournament, could have gone back-to-back. That stinks. John Rahm is going to win a lot of golf tournaments in his career. He already has, and he will in the future. So that was kind of what I thought. I was like, man, what if this was a kind of a journeyman player having a great week? That was one of the situations I thought of. But what did you think of the way they handled it?
Like you said, there was really no other way to do it. You can't let him like walk off and continue. However, like they, you know, he had been doing the contact tracing thing all week or whatever, starting Monday. You've been in contact with someone that tested positive. He had to take a test every single day. Come Saturday, and he tested negative until Saturday. After the conclusion of the second round on Saturday, he retests. And they get the confirmation around like 4:20 p.m., I think. And then they, you know, find out like 6 or something that it, if it really is COVID. So you got to think, I mean, how many guys did he come in contact with? I know it was limited access to facilities and being indoors and different whatever around the course. And I'm not criticizing. I'm genuinely curious how many people like I just want to know how, like, I wonder how many people he came in contact with in the times when he was like still testing negative. So I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I don't know if he was like giving other people the virus at that time, but Saturday you knew we had it. So I'm just curious, like, why, or just Morikawa and the other guys that were around him, like, just for them, I'm curious. But I mean, golf is, it's a pretty distance thing. So
that's one of the things we've talked about since the beginning of the entire COVID situation, is golf benefited from the natural spacing of the tournament. And if you watch when he makes the ace on Saturday morning, his playing partners don't high five him. Morikawa is walking away and like gives him like virtual dap from like 6 feet away. Mm-hmm. Like it's all, I mean, it sounds like he told them beforehand, hey, I've got a positive, it might be false, I don't know. And they're like, okay, whatever, let's play. Like, you know, maybe they were cognizant of it throughout the round. You hope that this didn't spread in any way. I think the fact that this happened in June of 2021 and not in June of 2020 speaks to this breadth of this global experience, and that this isn't gone yet. Like, as much as life feels like it's getting back to normal, it still exists, you know, it's still around and it can still hurt people. So it's wild. I'm glad he's asymptomatic.
Yeah.
And you know, poor Patrick Cantlay. It's not his fault that Rahm tested positive. Yeah.
And speaking of Patrick Cantlay, we had the Patrick Cantlay, Colin Morikawa playoff. They both hit terrible approach shots on their 19th hole or whatever, and on their first playoff hole, 19th hole, who am I? And then, I mean, Patrick Cantlay makes an incredible putt.
Yeah.
On the second hole. On the second hole.
Yeah.
Second playoff hole, first playoff hole?
I believe it was the second playoff hole. The big playoff hole, was still in regulation, where the whole weather delay thing, where they had hit, and then they – and then they stopped for a little while. It was a very odd kind of sequence of events. I admit I had that on mute on my double TV setup, and I had the U.S. Women's Open on as well, which was really compelling. I finished down the stretch. Lexi Thompson absolutely gagging down the stretch, but it was a good finish. But as far as Memorial goes, the thing that was most interesting to me is that Morikawa almost won that golf tournament. He is far and away statistically the best strokes gained approach player on the PGA Tour this season. Mm. He was terrible on Sunday. He ranked like 58th in the field in strokes gained approach. He still almost won the golf tournament with those. I mean, he was all over the place with his irons. I don't know if he's getting bad numbers or what was going on, but he was not himself and still almost got the win. This is kind of interesting. I know it's a little bit of a statistical anomaly that you had the last three winners at Memorial, Morikawa at Workday, Cantlay at Memorial, and Rahm Memorial were the three main foils in the story all week. It's almost like Memorial's turning into like the course horsiest horse for the course venue.
It really is,
One of the most on tour. And I looked at, you know, last week we talked about on the Gimme, and Jason and I talked on the podcast about the enormous significance of approach play here. It's a lot like Augusta National, where the rough maybe isn't necessarily as penalizing. There's more rough at Jack's Place than there is at Augusta, but, you know, the significance of iron play and players who are really strong in that particular skill set, it really shone through this week with the guys we saw contending.
I agree. And like you said, we have horses for courses at Muirfield Village, but this week we're at a brand new venues. So we have the Balmetto Championship at Congaree. It's filling in for the RBC Canadian Open, which is set to return again next year. So we do look forward to that. But let's look at the odds board from our friends over at BetMGM. So not shocking, South Carolina native Dustin Johnson plus 750. He leads the field. Brooks Koepka plus 800. It's moved down. It was 900 to open this morning. Tyrrell Hatton, 12-1. Matt Fitzpatrick, 14-1. Sung Jae Im, 16-1. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens this week, because there's a huge gap between those top five that I just read you and Brandon Grace, like Tommy Fleetwood, guys at 25-1. So these top five players, break it down for me. Who do you like here?
Oh, just give you an idea of how far this field is in disparity between Memorial last week and US Open next week. Garrick Higo is 15th on the board.
Yeah.
Not many American golf fans even know who that dude is. So
yeah.
You've got some top heavy action there with DJ and Koepka. And then, you know, you can find some value down the board. This is one of those weeks where if you dig a little bit and do a little bit of research, whatever's available with this course that no one's ever played on before. I thought it was interesting. Lucas Glover is a player ambassador for Congaree. And he said that he thought maybe, I think it was 20 of the guys in the field, maybe tops, have ever played this golf course before. So it's going to be really interesting. He also said, though, what I thought was cool, and you had mentioned this to me, is that the course is modeled a little bit off the Australian Sandbelt. So a lot that's really, you know, one of my favorite sporting events of the last several years. Favorite golf tournaments was that President's Cup at Melbourne a couple years back. And we saw all these different approach shots and interesting ways to play. Glover said he thinks that there's going to be long guys who are able to take advantage of their distance carrying, but you can also, for the shorter guys, reclaim some distance by hitting some runner shots and some shots that maybe are a little bit unconventional. So that doesn't help betters. That doesn't, it makes it really tough to pinpoint the type of player who might win. But it's over 7,600 yards. There's a 645-yard par five. There's a couple par fours over 520 yards. So maybe I favor distance a little bit. But when I think about Bermuda greens and some sand present, I kind of get the visual that this might look a little bit like the events in the Middle East on the European Tour.
Yeah.
Abu Dhabi, the Dubai Desert Classic, DP World Championships. So, you know, I'm looking at guys who've had some success on those type of golf courses, and maybe that'll point me in the right direction. But
I agree with that. I think the courses in Abu Dhabi, like those desert courses, I would say they're more similar to like a Shadow Creek or somewhere out west in the United States where it's a manufactured golf course. Like, it's kind of along there, but the Australian Sandbelt courses, they're more like nature, right? You kind of go with how nature does it. And I agree with looking at the guys that play well over there, but I just like that's, I'm going to look more at guys who played well in South Australia, you know, guys that have played well at Royal Melbourne and the other events on the Australasian Tour. So I think there's a lot of golf to look at in the past in Australia, a lot of statistics that people should kind of look to and see who did well at certain courses down there and kind of go from there. I think that's going to be your best bet this week. Because, you know, we, like Lucas Glover said, only a handful of guys have ever played this course.
I like it. Maybe Sung Jae Im. I know he's high up on the board, but he kicked a lot of ass at that President's Cup. I mean, that might be somebody to look at this week. He hasn't been quite himself this year compared to the way he played last season, but he's really interesting.
So let's look at the top of the board here. Some of the top tier guys we haven't talked about yet. Like I said, Brandon Grace is 25-1. Tommy Fleetwood's 25-1. You have Lucas Glover at 40-1. Garrick Higo 50-1. Keith Mitchell all the way up at 40-1. We haven't really seen him that high on the board lately. And Kevin Kisner 50-1. South Carolina guy. Do you know? Does he have a history here at this course? Does he know this course?
I don't know for sure. I do know that he snapped a streak of five straight missed cuts in his last start. So not the kind of form that you'd like to see. I mean, he was one of the guys I was really interested looking into it. And I was like, I haven't heard much from Kisner. And you pull it up and he's missed five of his last six cuts. So Lucas Glover hasn't won the PGA Tour in 10 years. And he's what, 11th on the board? I mean, it's kind of an interesting mix when you look at there. And then Vince Whaley has been kind of a statistical darling for a while now, the last six, seven starts. He's got one of the longest cuts made streaks on the PGA Tour. And I was like, this is my week. He's my long shot. I look down. He's only 66 to one.
I know.
He's not really a long shot. So, but at the top of the board, I think, you know, there's some guys who haven't really necessarily had terrific form recently. Tommy Fleetwood, big name in the sport, right? But he hasn't really contended a ton since COVID began. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. It's just a dip in form. You know, Alex Noren's a guy who's had a ton of success in Europe. Hasn't played a ton of great golf recently. You know, Ian Poulter is at 33 to one, same kind of situation where, you know, he had some good finishes earlier in the year, but you don't really know what you're going to get for a guy on the other side of 40. So, it's certainly interesting. I wish I could give more, you know, precise, you know, lasers at the top of the board, but honestly, this is a week where I'm looking a little bit deeper and trying to find some value.
All right. So let's look kind of center of the board. You see the guys starting at like 80 to one, Pat Perez. I don't love that number for him, but Rafa Cabrera-Bello, 80 to one. I do like that number for him. And I also like that 80 to one number for Richie Wurwenski. Like he plays well on these kind of courses. JT Poston at 100 to one, Eric Van Rooyen. Now, if Eric Van Rooyen plays well here and Brandon Grace plays well here, Garrick Higo will play well here. For whatever reason, the South Africans like text each other before an event and are like, hey, do you want to play well this week? Yeah, okay, let's all play well together. And they just go from like pod to pod, and you watch it on the European tour every single week, especially when they're in South Africa. They play a certain type of golf course really, really well. And because of these similarities with this course and in Australian golf courses, I think this actually could be a week where we do see the South Africans doing very well.
You mentioned Rafa Cabrera-Bello, really liking him. That's a guy who correlates really strongly with my courses in the Middle East success type situation I was thinking about. He won the Dubai Desert Classic 9 years ago, runner up 6 years ago.
I think he's also a guy
who plays everywhere, all over the planet. He is not going to be fazed by seeing a golf course for the first time because he does it several times a year. And in comparison, a lot of guys on the PGA Tour, year in, year out, they might see one or two new venues, you know, based on what their schedule is. That's not the case for Cabrera-Bello. Another guy who's a little bit lower on the board, has been playing some better golf recently, finished in the top 20 the last time the PGA Tour was in South Carolina. Danny Willett, he's won in Dubai, plays globally, third on tour in strokes gained around the green. Lucas Glover, and I know he's been the go-to source for all the information about the course because we don't really have a ton of it. He said that it plays firm and fast. That tells me a low greens and regulation percentage by the field this week to be expected. Danny Willett, third on tour in strokes gained around the green. So if that holds true, that statistic's going to be all the more important. And I think that he's a guy who you could find some value in down at 80 to one. That's a pretty good number. I'm going to have him for a top 10 and a top 20 probably.
Yeah. And there's some guys around, you know, the 100 to one that I don't love. Roy Sabatini, I'm not sure I like him at that number, but then Camilo Bajegas is 125 to one and he's been playing some really solid golf. He's been making cuts. So I like him for prop bets this week. A lot. Tom Lewis, 125 to one, also another European that he's recently found his form. Like when we first saw him in, I guess, was it 09 or 2010 or whatever, and he played with Tom Watson, and he was named after Tom Watson. Oh, it was so great. And then he went away and we never saw him again. And then, you know, fast forward, now he's, you know, winning events on the European Tour and he's playing well. So I like him. And then Peter Uihlein also 125 to one. He just won on the Korn Ferry Tour not too long ago. So that's who I like in that range. What do you think of that range? I think there's a little bit of value in there.
So Lewis is an interesting guy. He works with Brad Fats. And a big thing that I've talked to Brad about with Tom is that confidence is huge for Tom Lewis, is that once he sees some balls, once he sees some putts go in the hole, the confidence builds, he's able to gain momentum. So if he gets off to a hot start, I think he's somebody you could watch through the weekend. In that range, the two most interesting guys to me are two young guys. So John Pach making his pro debut.
Yeah,
I think he was the Nicklaus Award winner or just
the Haskin. He won the Haskin Award. He was the top collegiate male golfer. Yeah. I knew what you meant. There's only 50 different awards.
Right. Exactly. Boils down to, he's an absolute stud in college and he's going to be a really good player. He's making his pro debut, and a guy who's a stud at Clemson right down the road, Bryson Nimmer, in the field this week at 200 to one. I'm really interested in how they play. I think that might be a little fun side action for like a top 10 or a top 20 for both those guys. The pressure of your pro debut. I mean, I know John Rahm contended a few years back in his pro debut on the PGA Tour, but it doesn't happen very often. And Bryson Nimmer, they're two guys who are really interesting to me. They're going to be fun to watch. I always love when the young guys come out and make their, you know, first big statement on the big stage, but maybe just a little bit of side action there. Top 20, maybe like top 40. That could be fun.
Yeah. And this field just keeps going with the odds here. And I found another South African that I really like. Wilco Nienaber, 150-1. Another really good South African.
Hits it so far.
Hits it so it's it is unreal. It's like, I think he breaks the sound barrier every single time. He goes full Chuck Yeager.
He's basically, he's a European tour long drive competition dude. Like, he absolutely bombs it. So to see him on this course, if distance proves to be really valuable, we're not sure if that's going to be the case. He's really interesting. He's going to be fun to follow this week for sure.
Yeah, Hudson Swadford, 250-1. That's also not too bad. He's kind of like a local guy. Like, we're not too far from Savannah, and I know he's a Georgia guy, and that's not terrible value on a guy like him. Who else do you like way down here in the bot, like the crumbs?
Man, it's interesting. I mean, we'll fill out our DraftKings lineup here in a minute, and I feel like we're going to be plucking from this collection of players. Probably Nienaber. That's probably the guy who I look at and see. Some interesting value there at 150-1, someone who hits it a long way. You know, guys flashed a little bit here in the last few months, playing a little bit better golf, is Jason Duffner. You know, not the most consistent player at this point in his career. On the other side of 40, that tends to drift a little bit, but you know, he's played a little bit better golf recently. He's a guy, he's a Southern dude, Auburn graduate. So, you know, maybe he's got some experience here he's played a lot of golf in this region, I know, in his career. So, a little bit further down the board, he's an interesting player. And then that's about, I don't think you need to go much further than that, because it's in a weak field like this, you end up with a lot of guys on the back end towards the bottom who are, you know, either, you know, drifting into Champions Tour territory or, you know, just don't make a lot of starts regularly on the PGA Tour.
Exactly. So it's perfect time for us to start our DFS lineup.
Want to be a DFS millionaire? You're just one lineup away.
We're going to go nose to nose with him, and you're going to play better than you ever dreamed of, because, God damn it, that's what I demand of you.
So let's get drafting.
I'll let you go first. Who do you like to start it off this week?
I'll go with the guy I mentioned earlier who's been playing some better golf. Top 20 finished the last time there in South Carolina. I anticipate that there's going to be a pretty low percentage of players hitting the green regulation this week in terms of the field. Danny Willett is third on the PGA Tour in strokes gained around the green.
Hi, just a quick editor's note here from the producer. Danny Willett was a late subtraction from this field, so please disregard any Danny Willett plays.
All right, I'm going to go with a guy that knows this course pretty well, Lucas Glover, 8,600 this week. I assume he's not going to be that high owned at that price, but he does know this course, and there's no
reason. He's the only one. He's
not going to make the cut. So 8,600, Lucas Glover.
I like it. Actually, played some decent golf. Tied for eighth place 2 weeks ago at Colonial, and he's made 9 of his last 10 stroke play cuts. So I thought that was kind of an interesting pick going into the week after I've basically been combing through his quotes to learn about this golf course over the last, you know, 24, 48 hours.
This is Action Network podcast producer Matt Mitchell, here to tell you our friends at BetMGM have a great new sign-up offer for our listeners. A $600 risk-free first bet. Here's how it works. If you don't already have an account at BetMGM, just sign up, make your first deposit, and place that initial wager. If the bet wins, you get all the money. If it doesn't win, BetMGM will refund you in free bets up to $600. It's that simple. Just click on the link in this episode description to get started. BetMGM has been a great podcast partner, and they've got all the features gamblers like us love, like live betting and daily odds boosts. Plus, they're compatible with BetSync, so when you place a wager at BetMGM, that bet can automatically be tracked in your Action app. So open an account today and make your first bet risk-free up to $600. Just click on the link in this episode description to get started. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Michigan, New Jersey, Colorado, Indiana, West Virginia, Iowa, Virginia, Tennessee, Nevada, or Pennsylvania. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada, 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-270-7117 in Michigan, 1-800-889-9789 in Tennessee, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, or 1-888-532-3500 in Virginia. BetSync not available in Nevada. Thanks for listening. Now back to the show.
My next pick, let's see where he's priced at. Okay, I really like this price. We both mentioned him. We like him a little bit down the board. Rafa Cabrera Bayo at 7,800, I think is a nice value. It's going to give us some money on the back end, get some bigger names in there. Cabrera Bayo, three top 40 finishes in a row, respectable on the PGA Tour, including the Memorial, where he had a really bad Saturday, but still had a reasonable finish. Some value down the board. And I talked about the comparisons to maybe some of those courses on the European Tour in the desert. So Rafa at 7,800.
All right. I like that. I'm going to actually go with Vince Whaley, a guy we just talked about. We all love him here. He is 7,700 this week. No top tens. However, he's been playing so well. We cashed with the top 20 recently. So I like him a lot.
Whaley, one of the longest active cuts made streaks on the PGA Tour. So I think that's really good value at 7,700. I don't think I've seen him hit a shot on a broadcast yet, but
I know
if you comb through and it's just player A, player B, and you're looking at numbers, you're like, this guy's pretty respectable value, especially this week in this field. All right, so we've got 18,000 left for our last
two. Where are you going? Are you going to spend some money?
I feel like I need to. The thing is, when you get a little bit below that 9,000, which is what we've got in terms of splitting the difference here with our money remaining, like I mentioned that I'd fade Kisner. He has been playing great. Alex Noren is 8,900. Maybe HV3 at 8,500. That could be interesting. A guy you mentioned playing in Australia. He's won the Australian PGA Championship before.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? I'm going Harold Varner, 8,500. I'm going to leave you with 9,500 in the bank. Just talk myself into it with the Australian PGA winner and your comp to those Australian courses. I like that. So,
I like that.
He'd be a popular winner, that's for sure.
He would be a popular winner. He's from North Carolina, so not too far away.
Yeah, he's in the same, Carolina region.
All right, so you left me with 9,500. Garrick Higo is 9,000. On principle, I refuse to spend $9,000 on Garrick Higo in the United States of America. Like, hey,
if we're playing a third-rate European Tour event, though.
Not even third-rate. If we're playing the British Masters, I would spend that on him.
There you go. Drop it on him. We would do that. Just not on this PGA Tour. No, ma'am.
Yeah, I just don't love what I have left. Like, all the guys I would want are just a little bit out of range right now. But one guy that could potentially play well this week is Keith Mitchell. He's kind of been surprising us. He likes this, like, south, like, swampy golf. And I like him at a course like this.
Okay.
So he was 7,900. And we left 700 on the table.
By principle, I like leaving a little bit on the board. You leave a little bit on the table. It's like your side bank for some good karma, good juju. Keith Mitchell, one of the best drivers on the PGA Tour, 31st in driving distance, inside the top 20 this year in strokes gained off the tee. So let's see if the driver is as beneficial as we've been led to believe it may be. Pretty important this week here at Congaree.
Yeah, so our lineup, we have Willett, Glover, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Vince Whaley, HV3, and Keith Mitchell. Keith, not Kevin Mitchell. Send it. We left 700 on the table. Now, we never do that for Jason.
No. Jason, he gets the sixth pick when we make our gimme team.
Yeah.
And he's combing through Monday qualifiers.
Yeah, but I mean.
But I wouldn't do that to you. This is, Just Team Justin Rose making their first podcast appearance. I can't do that.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Good luck this week for Justin Ray from the 21st group. I'm Amanda Rose filling in for Jason Sobel. He will be back next week. Good luck this week with the Palmetto Championship. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Here's hoping you hit the green or whatever Jason says. We'll see you later.
We're finished talking.